Welcome to another episode of Season 5 of 3 and a Half Gentlemen, the podcast, where three of the four hosts provide a refined and intellectual analysis of movies from our private collections, while one of us tries desperately to keep up. We'll let you decide which host is which, but for now, my name is Sean, and with me, as always, are my co-hosts, Jeremiah.
Nothing is written, yo.
Eddie.
No prisoners.
And Brandon.
They can only kill me with a golden bullet.
Why do you like the desert, Mr.
Did Lawrence? They say that in the movie?
Because it's clean.
Yeah, they say that in the movie.
Golden bullet.
Guy thinks he's a god.
Bullet. Well, season 5, we're changing things up a bit. We'll still be picking movies that I think will be fun to talk about. But for this season, we'll play in a loose version of Six Degrees, where each host chooses their film based off the previous one, as long as the movie shares an actor, actress, composer, director, or writer.
As with every review we give, our goal is to answer one simple question. How many drinks does it take to get through the film that we just watched? At the end of the podcast, we'll rate the movie based on a scale of 0 to 5, 0 being a perfect film that you could watch stone cold sober, and 5 being sort of the film that makes you feel like you sat through an extra 3 hour and 45 minute film.
Boom.
And an extra 3 hour.
On top of this
45
one?
Minute film.
On top of this one.
On top of this
poorly
one.
Poorly written. Brandon, go.
On top of this one.
I never sat in an intermission before. I'm not going to lie. It's my first time intermission.
Oh, I have to tell you about my experience. Anyway, last week, Eddie had the pick with Troy. And with this week, Jeremiah has given the choice to Sean as a late birthday gift. So, Sean, go ahead and tell us a little bit more about the movie that we have, Crossing the Burning Desert, tonight.
So, in risk of losing every listener that we have gained so faithfully over the last 5 years, I have made a selection that is both personal and selfish, and I have selected The Life of T.E. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia, starring the wonderful Peter O'Toole. I saw this movie for the first time during COVID. And one of the things that I read about this movie was from a wonderful person called Leonard Maltin, who I don't even know if he's still alive, but he's a film reviewer. And he said that Lawrence of Arabia was the type of movie that you shouldn't seek out to watch. You should let it come to you. And in the moment that you get to experience this movie, it will be at a different time of your life, and it will change your life. And so mine was during COVID, and I watched this movie for the first time, and it quickly became, I think, one of the greatest movies of all time, but not just that, my favorite film. So thank you guys for letting me indulge myself. Even if you're negative about it, it doesn't matter. I think this is still a very important film in history, and I think you will be negative, but it's okay.
No, it's okay.
I forgive you in advance.
No,
I think it changed all of our lives for sure. I give you that. It changed all of our lives.
And like when you do like a HR investigation, when the person comes up to you, it's usually the person that's trying to get ahead of it, you know, and just kind of let you know like what's going on and shit, dude. And I felt like you just did that right now. I want to jump ahead of it, you know, and just tell you a story. Like,
don't know if you're going to enjoy this episode or not, but we're talking about something. No, Eddie, before I launch,
I'm excited.
Before I launch into my little part, Eddie, I want to just go ahead and tell you that I tell you, Sean's right. I did not seek out this film.
I concur. I did not seek upon this film as well. So maybe that's why I didn't let it come to me. So I watched it differently. So.
I should have waited and let it come to me when I was 85. But anyway,
not that. No, it's a movie that I definitely think everyone has to watch.
I would say I was in the desert with a horse with no name. That, yeah, felt good to be back in the rain. Yeah, that was me.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, 1962.
Been a long day.
we're just trying to mimic the movie. Anyway, 1962's Lawrence of Arabia follows the story of T.E. Lawrence, a British soldier during World War I who took it upon himself to help liberate the Arab tribes from the Turks. On the way, though, Lawrence finds himself grappling with the consequences of his own violent actions. Directed by David Lean, Lawrence of Arabia is the definition of epic film with the help of stars Peter O'Toole, Omar Sharif, and Alec Guinness, the OG Obi-Wan. This movie has earned an IMDb rating of 8.3 out of 10 and has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 94% with the critics and an audience score of 93%. So even, Eddie, Jeremiah, if we shit on this, Sean still has Rotten Tomatoes. We've still got that.
Young Frankenstein, guys.
Young Frankenstein.
As with every movie that we review, we try to pair our selection with a cocktail that we hope enhances the viewing experience. Ed, Why don't you take us through the drink that we'll be enjoying this evening?
Yes, this is the best part. So I'm actually excited with this one. Like we drank, this is poorly written, so I apologize to our listeners.
This one's good.
Like we drank a martini shaken that stirred with a James Bond film. We're enjoying a cocktail that represents our film. And since Lawrence Arabia is set almost entirely in the desert, we thought we will drink the blood and sand cocktail. For this drink, add 3/4 ounce each of scotch, sweet vermouth, and cherry liqueur, and freshly squeezed orange juice into a shaker with ice. Shake it well until it's chilled and then strain it into a coupe glass. Just know that, like a camel, you'll need to drink a few of these to stay hydrated over the length of this film.
I like it because it's clean.
Yeah. Great drink, Brandon. Great
blood drink. And sand cocktail.
Yeah, I want to start us off, Sean. I know you want to, but I'm going to start us off and say that unlike other movies we've reviewed in the past, Sean, like Young Frankenstein, I won't say that this movie. What was the term that I used, Sean? That you loved so much that had no redeeming qualities. No redeeming qualities.
Yeah, no redeeming qualities.
Sean, that was your first time watching this movie and when you had COVID.
No. During COVID, I didn't have COVID, just to be clear.
When he was coughing.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I was during the COVID. It was during the pandemic when it was 10 days to slow the spread or whatever, remember?
Yeah.
That turned into like 3 months.
Yeah.
And I bought like 40 movies.
I do remember
and
that.
Watched like the AFI's top 100
movies. That's when you bought groceries and you had to wash the bags.
Yeah, you had to wash the bags out. Yeah.
I thought you watched this movie before then, though. That's surprising to me. I thought you already watched this movie when you were younger with like your grandparents.
Yeah, I think you grew up with this movie.
Yeah. I did too.
No, it was the first time I'd ever seen it. Now, of course, I'd heard a lot about this movie. I remember there was an interview with Steven Spielberg, and he said that when he was like in 1962, he was probably 12, something like that. He snuck into the theater and watched it literally 18 times that summer. That it came out, and he just couldn't stop watching it. It was like the most incredible thing he'd ever seen in his life, and it made him become the filmmaker that he is. So, Brandon, you have some stuff
to
say.
He had 67 and a half hours of watching this.
67
and a half hours, Steven Spielberg. No, I was just going to say that while Sean was partaking in the deserts of Lawrence of Arabia, I was jumping headfirst into Downton Abbey, which I am still so trapped in that beautiful mansion. So I'm saying I came out ahead. That's all I'm saying. Jeremiah, Hannah, that one's for you, Hannah.
Yeah. Two of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. She'll love that one. So guys, can I ask you something though? Eddie, I love it that you were, you mentioned the, like beginning of the film, like you thought you got the wrong copy or something like that, because for the first 4 or 5 minutes, you're just like,
I timed it. It was 4 minutes and 23 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just straight music and probably, black screen.
I really should have, because I bought it like a Criterion Collection, like the best version you possibly could get. And I bought like, that's when I bought the big TV. Remember, I bought that, the huge TV, brand new for like before COVID. And I put this thing in and it's a black screen and I'm like, oh, fuck, like, oh, sorry. Like, what happened? Like, is it a bad disc? Like, what's going on here?
You start checking your connections of your TV.
And it just keeps going on and on and on. But you just have to, so it's, there used to be like this thing called an overture, right? So an overture is still there for plays a lot. Where it introduces you to the themes of the movie and it shows you the music of what is to come. And I'm not a huge fan of overtures. In fact, I think that, I don't know why they keep putting them on. I will correct you, though, Ed, something you said before the podcast. This is your first movie with an intermission. That is incorrect.
Oh, Sound of Music.
We did Sound of Music.
Sound of Music.
And it has an overture. You know, so just so you know.
That movie was beautiful. Okay? I was so singing on top of the wind and on the clouds.
Not comparing the two, I'm just saying.
Just to let you know, Eddie, that's not the worst like opening, because me and Sean, we watched 2001 Space Odyssey, and we were drunk and we're just like, okay, after 10 minutes or 15 minutes, like, I don't think this movie's starting. What the fuck?
That's horrible. I'm like, crazy.
It was the longest.
Oh, it was so terrible.
You know,
terrible.
I'm just letting you know, I paused this movie probably about four different times. I thought I only downloaded the music version of the soundtrack. I unplugged my TV. I was looking at chords. I was like, no. And then I was like, well, let's just fast forward it. I was like, oh, there it shows up. Around like 5 minutes. Okay, let's go back a little bit.
Yeah. And then it's like him on a motorcycle, and then he basically dies in the first 5 seconds.
I was like, I love the way it started. I was like, oh, okay, I get to know how he ended.
No. So I've got my fun. So Brandon, I've got my fun story. So Sean, who I respect very, very much, in case you guys don't know that, and I mean that seriously, he has talked since COVID about how great Lawrence of Arabia is. And so when he finally said, we're doing Lawrence of Arabia, I did something that I've been wanting to do for a very, very long time, and that's to go onto Amazon and buy my own copy of it. Now, there were lots of ones to choose from, and I decided to go with the Columbia Classics version because, number one, it was the cheapest. So anyway, I got this thing plopped in. I open it up, and it's got two DVD discs, and I'm thinking, okay, well, that's not a good sign. And then I decide to watch it, and I get about 45 minutes into it and fall asleep. And I'm like, okay, I'll pick up tomorrow. And then I finish the disc one, and I said to Sean, and I think it said to all you guys, I said, hey, I finally got to the intermission. I'm ready to start the second part tomorrow. So tomorrow comes, and I plop disc two in, and the disc two literally runs for about 4 minutes, and then it gives me the intermission, which to me is the worst packaging ever. They couldn't have added the 4 minutes to disc one. I watch 4 minutes, and then it's 15 minutes of intermission time, just me running through that and fast forwarding.
Just like, yeah, fast forward. So let's talk about this movie realistically. Yeah. And I really do want some of your opinions about it.
True because, story, huh?
I think the best place to start
didn't know that.
Is – yeah, is with the cinematography, because I think that for the first, I would say for first half of this movie, it is based on the visuals. The visuals take precedent. The silence takes precedent. The score takes precedent. And you've got a character of Lawrence who is essentially placed in Arabia as this figurehead to attempt to do something that nobody has ever tried to do or successfully done in the past, which is unite the tribes against the Ottoman Empire. And Lawrence has taken this task, I would say arrogantly,
to heart, man.
And with the idea that he is the Englishman who is going to unite the tribes of Arabia.
Yeah.
And I think that this is the starting point of the character as this kind of naive, vessel, empty vessel, arrogant kind of, I don't know. What do you guys think when you first see him, when he first arrives?
He's a military guy, right? So,
he's a cocky, arrogant military guy.
Cocky, yep. But he also wants to do, like, this is his first, I want to say it's his first real mission, because what I thought it was like, he makes maps, was one of his jobs, is he makes maps. And you know, he does all that. So he was a go-getter, you know, and so he's like over the top, maybe. I don't know, like he's all the way in a little too soon, I thought, but
it's kind of putting a theoretician into the field. It's like, that's the feeling that I got from it.
Yeah. No, to me, I was actually interested because I knew nothing about it except like guy who goes into Arabia and interacts with the tribes. Like, I didn't know that it was about him leading them to freedom. I didn't know that it had anything really about that. So it was good and interesting for me to come in completely blind. And I was shocked. I was completely taken aback by the fact that we have this Jesus complex, a savior complex guy who in a lot of ways, and Sean, maybe, or, you know, Ed and Jerry, you guys can disagree with me too, but I don't feel like he ever gets he doesn't get brought back to the good side. Like, literally it's about the degradation and the destruction of the person. And I was shocked. Like, when we see him, and I will criticize O'Toole's acting just a little bit. When we see him after, you know, the slaughter, and I know I'm jumping way ahead, but we have the slaughter where he just basically goes in and massacres, you know, the Turks. And we see him just like shaking, which I think was a great attempt at it, but he just kind of looked kind of buffoonish to me. But we see this, and I thought, man, this is a ballsy move for a movie made in the 1960s, especially where there's no redeeming. There's no redemption for this guy. And I thought that, I will give it a lot of credit just for telling that story right there.
The reason why I think this movie is so brilliant and will stand the test of time is that it is perhaps the greatest it's a character development story you could possibly ask for. You've got an empty vessel, arrogant, young, green, fresh, who has the audacity to believe that he can unite an entire people against one of the greatest empires of all time, the Ottoman Empire. And there's a scene early on in the movie, and I've talked about this before, where pre-intermission, where he gets his white outfit. He gets his white
tunic,
uniform, yeah. as if you were a tunic. Yeah. And he's looking at himself in the reflection of a knife, and he holds his knife up, and he's looking at the dandy he is, and that he is the savior of all of Arabia. And then you flash forward to where Brandon was talking about, and he's about to kill someone after he becomes a warlord capable of massacring thousands of people, and being everything that he hated when he started is what he became over the course of this movie. And he sees himself again in this blood-drenched knife with this costume that is degraded and destroyed and full of blood and full of decisions. And he sees himself again and he breaks down. And I think that that character arc from empty vessel to warlord in the picture that we're talking about, in the backdrop that we're talking about, is brilliant. I think that is why this movie is so good, is because it has that total character arc.
Yeah.
That is so not present in so many other movies.
It's a ballsy movie.
Now, I will say this before I cede the microphone. I will say this movie has flaws. I'm not going to say it does not have flaws, but the flaws to me are subsumed by the arc. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, the overacting a little. That's Peter O'Toole. Yeah. And that's 1962, a Shakespearean actor.
Yeah.
Jeremiah, sorry.
No, what I'm about to say is, like, I love the fact that this movie comes full circle with the two leads. Like, at the beginning of the film, Lawrence is disgusted with Ali, you know, the way how he slaughters people and with death and everything. And then for the end of the movie, Ali is disappointed with Lawrence, yeah, of where he's going with, you know. And I like how it comes full circle, you know, with the two leads. And I think that's really interesting how they, you see that on the screen.
That's
cool
here. To see that.
And it's a visual, you know, representation. Because you got the white, he's wearing white, and you got Ali wearing black, which I think is just really cool. Yeah.
But you also have the opening scene where Ali comes into the picture, mm-hmm, and he shoots Lawrence's guide, and he says, my friends don't murder people. And he says it with this like posh British boy, I'm at school and the headmaster is going to admonish you for doing something.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, at the end of the movie, you have this disappointment in, you know, he's lost his schoolboy.
No, but you said it, Sean, literally said it, like he became everything that he hated, you know? I mean, imagine losing your soul, losing your identity, and you become everything that you hate at the end of the movie. You know, you're just like, well, that's sad, dude.
Where do you think he lost it, though? That was my question. What point do you think he lost it to?
Well, I think there's two parts you could argue. Yeah. Well, no, yeah, I think there's two parts you could argue. One is the slaughter, but the other one that I think is really interesting is when he defiantly, I think it's really defiantly, gets up and is like, yeah, whip me, like torture me. And he doesn't break, but he breaks mentally. He breaks internally. And I think he realized his own fallibility. I don't know. Do you guys get that? Because I think in a lot of ways, that's the moment, Ed, where he fully gives in.
I was going to lean towards that. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
See, I agree on that. He actually believes he's immortal. I think that he is bought into the savior mentality, because we're jumping around a lot, but there's a beautiful scene between Alec Guinness and a reporter. And the reporter is talking about getting America into the war. And, you know, it's all about optics. Who are you going to use as your symbol to bring you know, America into the war. Yeah. It's like there's no better person than Lawrence.
Yeah, he buys into it.
And that's what we're witnessing here in this movie is the absolute devolution of T.E. Lawrence. But it's so funny because his mystique only gets better. The vision of unity only gets better the worse he gets. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
as he convinces these tribes that it's in their best, because it is in their best interest. At the end of the day, he's doing something altruistic and good. Yeah. But in order to do this good thing, he has to be such a horrible person.
I started enjoying it. It's just so hard to, yeah, for me.
Yeah,
no,
and Sean,
once
I
started
think,
doing yeah, that.
Yeah.
The second. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but Sean, I think that one of the things, and you'll love this because you love history so much, but I think that we have to take into context the historical situation. We had World War I, which is going on, right? The quote unquote Great War. Not quote unquote, the Great War. We had this idea that these troops, these soldiers, these generals, these captains, they were ruled by violence, right? They were at a time where violence was life. And so you have Lawrence come in. And at first say, well, I'm going to buck the system. I'm going to take over the tribes of, you know, the Turks and the Ottoman Empire, without the violence, right? I'm going to democratize this group or whatever it is he's thinking. And then at that point, he starts his devolution down. But in doing so, he becomes more and more like the people he's surrounded by. We're not just talking about the Arabs and the Turks, but we're also talking about the British Empire. And I mean, this isn't even getting into the idea of, you know, colonialism that's going on rampantly at the time.
Well, that's what's so beautiful about his character is he's a British officer who is against British imperialism. Yeah. And for those of you who don't know, British imperialism is the British policy basically up until 1910, of colonizing different countries with basically a flag. That was British imperialism, yeah, is that they went and colonized these different countries. So to have him as a character going into, you know, real life character going into Arabia and not colonizing and letting the people decide what they wanted to do, you know, and it happened to be through violence. Mm-hmm. This has ramifications to today. Faisal, the guy who played Alaginus, the character Alaginus played, was Faisal I of Iraq. He was the first leader of what we know now as Iraq. Mm-hmm. So the way that the Middle East is constructed today is in a great part because of this movie and because of T.E. Lawrence.
Really interesting, yeah.
So it's really interesting to see the ramifications of kind of an arrogant British soldier. And Eddie, you said something, I think that the second part of the movie is better than the first part of the movie. However, the first part of the movie, I think, is slow and it introduces you. It takes its time introducing you to the innocence of the character and the kind of the altruism of the character. Perhaps too long, mm-hmm, but that makes the second part, The Fall, all the better because you really know where he came from. Yeah. So I do agree with you.
Jeremiah?
I think I'm more of a fan of the first part of the film. I think the first part of the film, it really captures like just visually and cinematography. It's just fucking stunning, dude. When we get the first introduction of the desert, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything in recent past just like how amazing a shot can look, you know, and especially we live in an age of like CGI. I mean, I don't think the best CGI could even deliver what you saw on screen. I think this movie changed a lot of ways on how we were able to actually use the camera and use it as a way to actually introduce a whole new world, man, because I think the visuals, the cinematography was fucking unbelievable.
Well, we talk about Star Wars all the time, and we mentioned this kind of in passing before we started, but I mean, Tatooine is Arabia. I mean, Tatooine is the desert sands that we have here of them crossing the desert. That's Tatooine.
You can tell this movie has so much influence on other filmmakers, inspired many generations. Like you said, you think of like George Lucas with Star Wars, you know, especially walking through the mountains and stuff, you know, Spielberg with Indiana Jones, you know, Nolan with Interstellar, you know, right, how it's shot and everything like that. Yeah. Cameron with Avatar. This is almost like Avatar took the story from Lawrence of Arabia when you think about it, man. Mm-hmm. You know?
I mean, yeah.
Exactly, the same amount of time, too.
Yeah. Listen, Dune Part 1 and Dune Part 2, I mean, it paved the way how we were able to actually look at films now.
See the expanse.
I mean, Dennis Villeneuve. I think Denis Villeneuve. How do you say Villeneuve. His name?
Denis Villeneuve.
I think that he has watched this. I'm sure he's watched this. I'm sure he's watched. There was another movie called Bridge on the River Kwai, Dr. Zhivago, which are all David Lean movies, and the scope of what Hollywood was getting into was this. It was contrary to the rules of cinema. The subject was small and the backdrop was enormous. You were shown the world and our place in it and how small it was. And that's, if you watch this movie again, you'll notice these big, wide, brilliant, beautiful shots of these people crossing the desert of tea, Lawrence crossing the desert. And then as you get through the intermission and toward the end of the movie where he becomes bigger than the desert, it's a lot of close-ups. It's a lot of big shots of them, of the people. There's also some big wide shots, but there's a lot more personal shots. Yeah. They follow personal characters. And this is because in storytelling, the director is changing the course of the movie from the character being not as important to now the character is incredibly important to the story. Yeah. And I think that visual change is something that we don't get from directors anymore. You just don't get this kind of movie anymore. Mm-hmm. Like it or hate it, you just don't get it. I wish we had someone who would do
yeah.
it. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I think we do. I think we have Villeneuve. I think we have Nolan. I think that we have some of these these directors who are returning to cinema.
Michael Bay.
Going off that.
I mean, Oppenheimer. Yeah. Oppenheimer was pretty fucking. It was close. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that's good. So, no. Going along with this, one of my favorite things in any story, whether it be film, whether it be a novel, whether it be a TV show, is where the setting is an actual character, right? Where the setting actually plays such an integral part of understanding the story that it basically is an acting character. So my question is, do you think that the harsh conditions of the desert and the setting that Lawrence was in and they were in that situation, do you feel that that is what caused his rupture, his devolution? Or do you think it was the power hungriness? My question, I guess, is just how much of an impact do you guys think the setting of the desert and the remoteness and the heat, how much did that play into Lawrence and his fall from grace?
That's a good way to look at, you make it sound like he was, when you first walked in and compared to the fall from grace, it has to be the desert. It has to be some desert in there. It almost like you're going crazy a little bit with
the
same fights over and over and over again. Almost, it seems like it wasn't ever ending. You know, it at one point he seemed like, I think that's where it became almost like he was just going crazy.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I feel like he lost it when he thought, you know, he was the next Messiah, like he was godlike, you know. Mm-hmm. That he was the one to bring the promise, you know, to this nation and everything like that. So I think the temptation of it got the best out of him, mm-hmm. and he lost himself in the end of it. That's what I think of it.
Yeah. So I think that life imitates art. Peter O'Toole, when he took the role of Lawrence, which was he was not the first choice for the role of Lawrence, he was very lucky to get this part. And David Lean did not like him.
Really?
Because he was an alcoholic, because he didn't show up on time. He wasn't professional. He was Peter O'Toole. I mean, Peter O'Toole is all of those things and more. However, there was a couple of scenes in the desert where Lean made Peter O'Toole ride that camel and give the same performance 100 times.
Fuck.
In the 100-degree weather and it was one of the scenes where his hat was off and the sun was beating down and he was – Again. And Peter O'Toole's wife was there at the time. And she said to David, you're not going to break him. And David Lean said, the desert will break him. Mm-hmm. And from that moment on, Peter O'Toole gave a performance that I would think is the culmination of just great timing and great people put together with a great script. Anyone can write a script about T.E. Lawrence. Anyone can get behind the camera. Anyone can do the music. I think that greatness is like lightning in a bottle. And I think the fact that Peter O'Toole was broken by the desert, just like T.E. Lawrence was broken by the desert. Peter O'Toole thought he was God's gift to acting, only to find out that this movie really stretched his limits of what it meant to be an actor and changed his life forever. And yeah. the fact that he didn't win the Academy Award for this haunted him for the rest of his life. Yeah. His life paralleled. The movie won 7 Academy Awards. He did not win. But Peter O'Toole, this movie paralleled the life of T.E. Lawrence, paralleled the devolution, perhaps not the devolution of the character, but his devolution and ultimate reprisal as an actor. His bounce back from this movie he was a completely different, well-known, top Hollywood actor. Before the movie, he was nothing. So I think that life imitates art. Yeah. And I think that the desert will make or break your movie, just like the sea will make or break your movie. Mm. And this movie was made by that desert.
Well, where was this movie filmed? It was in Jordan and Syria.
In Jordan and Syria. So mm-hmm. in Arabian Peninsula.
It was beautiful. Like that. I mean, the whole movie was beautiful. So that was definitely not a pain point to watch that. Like, it was beautiful to see the desert. There's not many movies that I think can capture the desert in a beautiful way. Right. So personally, I enjoy that part.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think, okay, so we make a lot of jokes and we've been making a lot of jokes about the length of the movie. And I do think that it's kind of warranted in a lot of ways, but more than anything is that you can have a 3.5 hour movie. We talk about Oppenheimer, which is a 3 hour movie. So granted, we're missing out 37 minutes that this one has. But that doesn't feel like a 3 hour movie. To me, I just finished watching that again last week. I mean, it feels like you're only there for 1 hour 45 because it's so well paced. I think that what this movie does poorly is its pacing. I think that it's not just long, is it slow? And here's the thing. I think that there are times where it should be slow, but I feel like almost every single scene is drawn out to a length that hurts it. And I think that's unfortunate. And I think that we even get that in the second half, which is supposed to be the much more action-packed, action-oriented portion. I feel like so – I mean, I look at my notes here of what I was taking, and I feel like, my multiple times of restarting the film. And that's because me, who really never falls asleep in front of a movie, never gets super tired in front of a movie – I was falling asleep in this movie multiple times, and it's because it was so slow, not just long, but just slow.
I had to pause it because, because it was the slow parts I felt was dragging on. A lot of, from Brandon, I agree with you, a lot of run-on scenes. I don't know, like a run-on sentence. Like, I feel like they could have wrapped it up a little faster, but they were just a lot of intermingling with conversations that I felt like wasn't necessary sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It's just like take what, it, what make it 2 hours, 45 minutes, hours, 50 minutes even. Shave off 45 minutes of this movie, and I feel like you have a much more compact and you don't lose the beauty, because this is cinema. And Sean, I'll give you that till the end of the end of night, is that this is cinema. And this is in a lot of ways what cinema should be. And I love cinema much more than I like a Netflix flick. I love cinema, and it does it well.
I read something about Spielberg said, if it was made today, the budget would cost over $285 million.
Oh, I can see that.
Basically for the same picture that you're trying to get right now, which I think is pretty fucking great. And especially that shows how Lean was able to actually just showcase what he was able to do back in the day and everything like that.
We were talking about some negative aspects of the movie. We were talking about pacing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the – actually, it's funny because one of the big positives of this movie is the pacing and is the minimalist approach of not filling it with dialogue and not letting the screen kind of speak for itself. I think that perhaps – in light of what was available in 1962 from the camera and from other films, played. I don't think it plays well today.
Yeah.
I think this is an area where it doesn't hold up as well, because I, like everyone else, want to see action. I want to see something happen. I just don't want to be enamored by the desert. But in 1962, this was the first time anyone had seen the desert, much less experienced something as big as this. This is the first time that we had seen Arabia as it was meant to be seen. Mm-hmm. And so I can appreciate it, but at the same time, totally accept the criticism of pacing and slowness, especially in the first half of
that was like one of my problems with the movie. Is like it felt like it lost its purpose with his pace.
Yeah,
you know, and I, at times, and I'm just like, you know, and that was kind of like the shit that I was kind of like, you know, a little like, what a frustrated, but I was just like, come on, dude, you know, what the fuck, you know, you don't need to do this here.
Yeah, and Brandon said you could shave off an hour, pretty much. Mm-hmm. You could shave off an hour, and I don't think you'll be fine. And I said you had a couple run on sentences, a couple times.
A few times.
Yeah,
but goddamn, it looked great. I mean, it looked gorgeous, dude. I mean, that whole battle scene, right? Thousands of extra horses, thousands of people and everything like that. And I'm thinking to myself, like, this is not even CGI. How the hell is someone doing this, directing this particular sequence, dude? I thought I was pretty much like spellbound when I saw this, dude.
Every extra died. So it was crazy.
Is that what happened?
You know, I was like,
he got covered up by the sand.
Yeah, every actor extra died with their horse. Is like, that's pretty impressive. Like,
all I could think about was like the attack of the Rohirrim on Minas Tirith in Return of the King.
Yeah.
And how beautiful that scene is when the sun comes up behind him and they're coming down. And I'm like, Peter Jackson, you cheat. he had more horses than any other person on film except David Lean in this movie.
I'm just saying. But we know part of that was CGI. This was nothing. Yeah. This was nothing of CGI.
This was another guy holding the camera on a horse.
That's where I think the pace. That's where I think the pacing is really hard to criticize. And I'm not saying you shouldn't criticize it. I'm saying it's hard to criticize because imagine being a director where you don't have CGI and you're like waiting to capture something, and then you capture it, and it's like, I want you to see it. I want you to see it now. I want you to see it for 7 minutes because it took me so long to find it and capture it. And you're like, let the camera roll. They're like, no, we got it. We got the no. Let it go. Keep going. It took me 6 years to get here.
Can you imagine? It's like, shit, we missed it. We missed the sunset. Yeah. Wait till tomorrow.
Yeah.
Exactly. So my thing, and I called Sean. I think I talked to you in my night break when I thought that I got to the intermission, but I really had 4 minutes left. But, you know, Sean called me up and he's like, you hate it, don't you? And I said, no, actually, I don't hate it. I hadn't gotten to part two yet. But, you know, I hadn't seen his fall. I hadn't seen his devolution. I hadn't seen that character arc really come to play. But all I kept telling Sean and all I kept thinking is in the entire movie is how miserable it had to have been to be part of this cast and crew. Like, I'm watching this going, I don't know if there's enough money you could have paid me to really get out there and hold a camera while I'm getting hit with wind. And I'm looking at the sand and nobody's covering their faces. And we're talking about, you know, like practical effects. How are they not blinded by sand and dying with just pellets of sand just hitting their cheek?
And nobody has sunglasses on. Nobody has sunglasses on. I'm like, where, no wonder these things were invented. Like, for God's sakes, you're flouncing throughout the desert in this white outfit on the back of a camel. It's gotta be sweating your balls off and cover your face. Yeah,
so he did change. He's just like, God, finish this fucking movie, please. Like,
well, what I really loved, and this is nuance, and this is me being just a sucker for this movie, is I love the hardness of his face changing. So if you watch the film, the makeup at the very beginning when he was more clean was very blurred. Like his features were a little blurry and perfect. And he was so beautiful at the beginning. And then as the movie progressed, his skin got hardened. His wrinkles came out. His whole face changed. And I think that is such a beautiful physical devolution. We're talking about character development.
Yeah, that's all this movie is.
This movie has the greatest character development from one to the, you know, start to finish. It's just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful movie with regard to that.
Yeah.
I understand that it has other issues. But
so the English, the British, did they not send any help for Peter O'Toole during his battles? Like, they just say, hey, go out there and win it. You're the face of...
He wasn't supposed to become a warlord. No. Yeah. He was supposed to be with Faisal and with like Anthony Quinn's character, and he was supposed to be like talking like, hey, you guys should like get together and attack this train, and like he wasn't supposed to be leading the army on the front of a fucking horse.
Well,
like,
I think that was crossing the desert
role. The train scene was cool.
Right. It was. But no, crossing the desert to me was obviously that was his stepping into the next realm for you know Lawrence. But to me, it was an interesting aspect because it was this, you know, this thing that can't be done. And not only did he do it, but he did it with a shitload of people behind him. And so it's almost like, did he do that? Right. Or is it kind of this mystique of the desert that he just kind of said, well, maybe it's not as hard as we actually think it is. And to me, so when, I guess what I'm saying is when they celebrate him as basically a god amongst men, it seemed kind of strange for me. And I don't know if you guys got that same feeling. And I'm looking at this more from a historical aspect.
No, from a filmic. He was a unifier. He showed the tribes that it was in their best interest. Yeah. That it was in their best interest not to fight with each other and fight the Ottoman Empire. Yep. And over they crossed the desert. And together they were stronger. Even with their qualms and problems, they were stronger together as one monolithic, which they were the greatest force in all of Arabia, if you really want to look at it. You know, their horse, when they crossed the desert, that was like Washington crossing the Delaware, or it was this symbolic moment of showing strength. It was a monumental moment showing strength. It was not supposed to be that way with Lawrence at the head, but he was the inspiration.
I think also like the whole point of him being like told that, you know, you're not really from this area. You don't know what this is going on. And that scene where he was like waiting in the desert, like he walks into the night and he really questions everything. He questions what he's going to do. He's kind of like, you know, in like this situation where if he's going to make the decision, he's going to make this leap of faith or not make this leap of faith, you know? And I think that's really important that we do get to see something like that where you see him like, all right, this is the point where I'm going to change the way how I'm going to, you know, go through what I need to do moving forward on that. I thought that was pretty cool.
We get him at his point of no return too. We see him literally transitioning. I think that's, we keep coming back to this character development, Sean, you it's about character arc. I mean, that's what this movie is. It's about pretty images with a person who completely loses grasp of reality and loses grasp of who he is as a human being. But I think that what's interesting about this movie, and we see this over the course of, you know, 3.5 hours, is we get to see every single nuanced step that he makes towards him, you know, his destruction. And we talked about this, but there's really those two impactful moments with him. One where he leads the slaughter and even Ali is like, this is too much. And then the second one, when he embraces the torture only to realize that torture hurts. I mean, that those two moments are his point of no return. And so when we see him at the end, and I mean, we didn't even talk about that moment where they're in the Capitol and they're all shouting at each other and they're trying to find peace and order, and peace and order is not happening. I think in a lot of ways, that's my favorite part of this movie, because it just shows the fruitlessness in a lot of ways of everything he went through to just create more problems.
Didn't matter.
It didn't matter. Yeah. It didn't mean anything. Yeah. In a big picture, it did, but in the small picture, it doesn't.
I don't agree with you that it didn't mean anything. He moved mountains. Well, no, I'm sorry, but he moved a mountain. He did something nobody said he could do. He unified a people, however briefly, against a common foe. And just because they don't get along at the end doesn't mean there's not hope for – they're all sitting down and talking. That's something that had never happened before. You have to realize this. It had
– No. I know, but it's squabbling. But here's the thing. They end not with any kind of movement towards peace. It's always – the whole thing is just like, this is pointless. Oh, you know, we're gonna end this early because – something happens and we got to go run out.
The point of this movie was to accomplish the goal of getting everyone at the same table and overthrowing the Ottoman Empire. That was the goal of that was set out in the very beginning. So that was his achievement. And at the hope of the movie is that, you know, they're sitting down and talking, where at the very beginning, he had to go individually to all the leaders of all the tribes, and they wouldn't talk to him, much less talk to their, you know, their opponent.
He's from the outside now looking in. He's completely out of way now. They don't want him there right. anymore, you know? And I think that's probably what the most sour shit of it, like all that shit.
He served his purpose.
Yeah. Everything he did, you know, in the end, he was just a tool in so many ways.
Yeah. So for being such a long movie, though, I do have one of the negatives is you're talking about character development. There wasn't enough of characters for me to buy into. I feel like after Sharif Ali and Peter O'Toole and maybe the prince, like after that, like I don't know anyone else's name, truly. Mm-hmm. And the prince, maybe I don't really officially know which one was he. I just know that's Alec Guinness, and every so often I saw him. Yeah. But like,
it's true. The kid that blows himself up with dynamite. we're supposed to be sad when the kid blows himself up with dynamite.
The other one of quicksand was scared the shit out of me. I'm not gonna lie.
It's like a DuckTales episode, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a DuckTales.
I wish there would have been more characters for me to buy into, because it was a little bit too much Peter O'Toole on nonstop for me.
I agree.
I wanted a little break of someone else, you know. I don't know.
I think if it had been made today, it would have been more of an ensemble cast, and you would have had more exposition about what was actually going on. I think that's a detriment to the movie, is that it's hard. For me, it was hard to follow the story. It was not hard to follow T.E. Lawrence's character and what he was doing day in and day out. But the overall, like, picture was hard to follow.
Yeah,
I see that.
And I think that does have a negative impact on it, for sure.
Just a question. When you guys were watching Alec Guinness,
OG Obi-Wan?
Yeah. Every time he was talking, I mean, he kind of, like, sound like Obi-Wan Kenobi in a way, you know? Did you guys were, like, waiting for him to go, "These are not the droids that you're looking for," you know?
I was waiting for him to say hello.
Were you waiting for him to say shit like that?
Hello there. Yeah.
Can I ask a real question?
Yeah.
Is this the only other movie you've ever seen him in?
Nope.
No, actually, I saw Empire Strikes Back, and I also saw Return of the Jedi.
of the Jedi.
Other than the Obi-Wan character, is this the only other movie you've seen?
No, I've seen that one movie recently.
Killers?
No, it was The Bridge of... The fuck was that? It's the same director who directed this
movie.
Bridge
of the River Kwai.
I've only seen a little bit of that, and I thought, like, hey, look at this guy.
Yeah. I think so. I think this is it.
That's amazing, man. Come on, dude.
Because he has, like, a pretty prolific career. Like, he's pretty good.
Which is why he hated being Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Really?
What were you going to say?
No, I believe he wanted to play the character T.E. Lawrence. Like, he was really interested, like, you know, kind of factuated about, you know, this particular person. And he didn't get it. So he's like, fuck it.
So he was in the movie Dr. Zhivago.
Which is Zhivago is the same. It's the same director, Omar Sharif, with Julie Christie. And David Lean was very offended, and actually it destroyed their relationship, that Peter O'Toole did not take the lead actor in that movie, Dr. Zhivago, after the you know, very difficult production of Lawrence of Arabia.
It was like 2 years of, like, you fucking trying to, like, ruin my life. No, thank you.
Yeah.
For a drink. Well,
and, but, actually, later in their lives, Peter O'Toole and David Lean made up, and they did fix that relationship. Because Peter O'Toole, before he died, he actually went around and fixed a lot of relationships that he had destroyed over the time.
Did he really?
He should have fixed Troy.
Yeah, he tried.
He should have fixed Troy, is all I'm saying, Ed.
Oh, Troy was a beautiful movie.
You should go and listen to that, listener. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there no one else?
I will say this.
I watched Troy 10 times over this.
If you really want a picture, and we'll finish with this, but if you really want a picture of Peter O'Toole, when he won his honorary Academy Award, he was able to speak. And one of the things that he said was having basically won this award, it gives the speaker time to really think. And he talks about how from his co-stars, he would gather strength and courage and everything it meant to be an actor in Handfuls as quickly and as much as he could. And I think that that's the type of actor he was. He pulled from everyone around him. And I think the performance in this movie, even though he didn't win the Academy Award, still goes down as one of the greatest performances of all time in all films. So,
I mean, this is in the top 10 of on the AFI list.
I think it's number 3.
I was going to say it's 6.
It might be 6. I thought it was number 3 behind The Godfather 2. Because it should be Citizen Kane, Godfather 2, and Lawrence of Arabia, something like that.
And up behind
Casablanca. No, fuck. Casablanca's up there. It might be 6. It might be number 6.
And that brings us to the end of review. Now it's time of the podcast where each of the hosts provides a score on the following scale. A.W. Lawrence, can you provide the scale?
Okay, guys. 0, the perfect movie. You don't need shit to enjoy it. 1, a feel-good first cocktail. 2, a happy buzz. 3, you're going to Uber lifting home. 4, a rough morning walk of shame. 5, blackout shit-faced spring break drunk. Gentlemen, this is going to be a hard one. I don't know how to judge this.
Can we do double digits?
Let's start with Brandon.
Well, we are season 5, Sean. We are revealing. So get your pen and write it. Eddie, I'm going to be interested to see what you give and to hear your reasoning.
Okay. On 3, okay?
No,
you guys ready?
On 3. I haven't even got my pencil ready.
What?
Brandon, what is that? I don't see
my
that.
Ring light.
It looked like a number, just wait. So you know. It looked like a number.
Okay, I have to be truthful to my feelings here.
Do you have to be truthful to your feelings? Eddie, I love you, buddy.
It's a 5.4.
Oh, Eddie, I love how you're stalling this thing, bud.
Okay, so long. Okay, can I say 1, 2, 3, or
yeah,
are you
go,
still
we'll do
doing
one?
Something?
Yeah, go. 1, 2, 3.
Okay, on 3. 1, 2, 3.
Oh. You want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So I respect each of you guys as film critics, but I don't know if I can respect all of your arguments. No, listen. So here's what I look at is that I came into this this evening in our discussion here with an absolute 4.5 in my mind. I thought that this is just – it's a hard movie for me to get to. You know, I think that we talk about a lot is a criteria for me is – rewatchability. Is this a movie that I want to rewatch? Is this a movie that I want to put in again? You know, we always go with the whole thing. If I walk by a TV and this movie's on, am I going to sit down and watch it? And I can tell for a damn fact, I'm going to be moving as quick as I can to the kitchen because I want to get away from sitting down and feeling my flesh actually melt into my couch. Okay. I think that this movie is a beautiful film. I think it's an absolutely beautiful film. I think that, Sean, we've talked about this in the past way before we even did the podcast. And that's that this is a type of movie where you can freeze frame any single shot, really, and you could put that up on a wall and say that's beautiful art. I think that this cinematographically is a beautiful film. I think that this film, though, struggles and is hurt by several different things. First and foremost, and primarily, it's the pacing. I think you shave off 45 minutes and you have a watchable film. And I'm not saying watchable as in like, you know, this is an unwatchable film at 3 hours and 37 minutes, but a film that I will want to watch and want to study again. This is very, very similar to 2001 A Space Odyssey for me, which is a movie that I respect, but I don't like in the least bit. I think that for me, Peter O'Toole, he's a good looking guy. I think that he commanded Lawrence well, but I think that he mugged too much. I think that he brought too much of the stage presence onto this character. And I think that his mental break made me smile and almost laugh when I should be feeling the hurt and feeling the disappointment like Ali was. And I could go on with a couple other things. That's not to say that I think this movie has no redeeming qualities. It does. It is beautiful, but at the same time, it has too many issues to make me say, ooh, this is a movie that I really want to rate highly. Is it a movie, though, that has completely revolutionized film? Absolutely. And that's why it's no longer a 4.5 in my book. That's why I've changed it. And so, Sean, Jeremiah, Eddie, I have you guys to thank for that. But for me, my rating is a 3.39. The 3.9 is just to piss Jeremiah, that's just to piss you off. It should be a 3.4, but I'm going to give it a 3.39. Jeremiah, I'm going to go to you, man.
All right. I have to say that I was impressed with the film. I think this movie changed the way how we view films and how feature filmmakers are able to make the impossible possible. I think on a technical standpoint, I think the cinematography, the visuals is one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen. And I think the music, which you didn't even talk about, man, I think the music's spellbinding. I think it was such a class of its own right there, man. But I agree with Brandon. I think the movie is way too long. It wasn't necessary in how I felt. You know, I felt like I wasn't a fan how the film started, and I didn't like how the film ended. And that's just me. Just like it didn't feel right for me. But that being said, I think the movie is a class of its own. Great performances, directing, music. It's iconic, dude. And you got to respect this movie, dude. So I give it a 1.9, dude. It's almost a happy buzz, but, you know, it's in the feel-good first cocktail range. Eddie.
So piggybacking off of both of what both you said, pretty much, I don't want to be too long, but this movie is a movie that, like I said in the very beginning, it's a movie that I do recommend for everyone to watch. It's a movie that you're going to enjoy. It's a movie that I definitely, my score doesn't reflect that. I didn't enjoy this movie. I did enjoy this movie. I just felt like it was a little bit longer than I thought it should have been. I wanted other characters to pop out more. I got a little tired of the same story played over and again. I felt like I was Peter O'Toole myself going crazy. I started at the beginning, I was like all happy. Oh, he's so handsome looking. And the very end, I was also dirty. I felt like I was dirty by the end of the movie with Peter O'Toole. I was like, we got through this, Peter. I'm here with you. I learned something with the history of this movie. I never knew. I'm going to show my bad history side, but I didn't know this was a true story until afterwards. So it's good to know. I just, you know, the reason why it's lower, you guys brought it down. It was, for me, it was a 4.5, 4.6, but Sean, you brought it down, and Jeremiah, you did it as well. And so the Brandon, like, it's a movie that I feel like there's definitely two sides to it. Either you like it really a whole bunch, or there's a movie that's like, you know what? It's not for me, but I do see how it changed cinema. So I'm more that side. I'm really happy I watched it. But I'm going to give this a 3.2. This is right below. I see there's Sean looking at me. I can't even look at him right now. This is right below
Uber
Lyft home with overflow. Yes.
You sure it's not a rough night, not a rough morning, but just a rough night of just like, boom, we're stuck here.
No. And so it did this. I did, to be honest, to be fair, I took me 3 drinks to finish this movie. It was a long ass movie. I wanted to drink it a little bit. So yeah, 3.2.
In all fairness, it took me 3 drinks as well.
A lot of blood. All right, sand.
So Lawrence of Arabia to me is, to Brandon's point, is not a movie that if you catch it on TBS, you're sitting down to watch. Much like Spartacus or Cleopatra or all the great epic movies that have been produced over the years, they're not ones to jump into. These are ones where you have to... you know, Jeremiah, you said you might wait a year and a half. Wait longer, maybe 3 or 4 yeah. years. Really, I mean, I'm being truthful with you. This is not a movie that you can watch. It's not Lord of the Rings. It's not you know, we watch Troy. I'd much rather watch Troy in the next 6 months than this movie again. But that's not what this movie is. This movie is the birth of all of cinema. That we love. The reason that, you know, Blade Runner exists is because of this movie. The reason Star Wars mm-hmm. exists is because of this movie. The reason that every movie that we hold, cherish mm-hmm. deep into our hearts exists is because of this movie. And every movie that we watch wishes and dreams and hopes of having the character development that this movie had. An ounce of what character development this movie had would take a Marvel movie and make it the most Academy Award nominated and winning movie in the history of the world. This movie by far is the greatest character study of any movie you've ever seen, perhaps a second to Citizen Kane, which is another unwatchable movie, a 3-hour opus to a man that nobody really cares about. They serve a purpose in the pantheon of cinema. And the purpose that they serve is that they did it first. They perhaps didn't do it the best, but they did it first. And this movie showed you something that no one else had ever showed you, in a way no one else had ever showed you, with music that was just absolutely stunning and brilliant and beautiful, with visuals and a performance that was without a doubt one of the greatest ever captured on film. So with that, it's hard for me to say, okay, the pacing was off, or I didn't really enjoy it, or I really didn't want to watch. That's not disparaging any of you. I totally expected actually worse, so thank you. All I'm saying is that this movie changed cinema forever, and it really did create a benchmark for greatness. And with that in mind, I'm rating it a point. What did I say? A 0.25.
Mm-hmm. I saw a 0.25.
I saw 0.25.
Yeah, 0.25. I'll hold you okay. to it. That's what I just want to make sure. I've been accused of changing my score.
0.0025. Wow,
0.25. Yeah. Now, this is not a perfect film. I totally understand this is not a perfect film. I think that Godfather, Casablanca, Sound of Music, those are the movies that you can watch time and time again and really engage in the story and enjoy it. So that's all I have to say. I really appreciate you guys for sticking with this movie. I know it was long as shit. I know that it was hard to watch, but I appreciate you having a cogent conversation about it. And that's all I have to say is thank you for indulging my fantasy on our podcast.
Eddie, should we tell them that it was all for a birthday gift from us, that we were just being nice?
No,
I know we should.
No, okay, we love Sean. Yeah. It was a matter of time with us watching this movie. Let's just be real. Okay. So
we ripped that Band-Aid off.
Yeah, I give Sean props, man, because, man, when you have a movie that you love so much and, you know, you got wolves next to us, you know, next to each other, man, ready to devour it, man. I mean, it takes a lot of fucking courage. A lot of courage, man. A lot of courage to go to the desert by yourself.
I like the desert because it's clean. When you take those scores and divide by four, what does Lawrence of Arabia get an average rating of?
It gives us a 2.185. 2.185. And where is
and Jeremiah, where engineer? Does that put us on the list?
I have the host.
Where does that put us on the list?
I don't see the engineer. Where is he? Oh, there he is.
Okay, so it's a score of its own.
Oh,
so
of course it is.
Congratulations.
Shocker. You're welcome.
So it is number 43 in our list.
43?
No, 44. 44 on our list. That's and where we're at, guys.
What is better than Lawrence?
What's better is Goonies, Breakfast at Tiffany's, oh. Some Like a Hot.
No.
Parasite.
Okay, yeah.
Fight Club. Young Frankenstein.
Oh, God.
Young Frankenstein. Okay.
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 Something like
you guys are fucked.
What's worse?
What's worse is The Watchmen, Quiet Place, John Wick 2, Tombstone, Christmas Vacation, Twilight, Hook, and so on.
I don't agree with that.
It really fits anywhere, though.
It does.
Where does this movie really fit? No one really.
We
knows.
Have to start a new list. We're gonna have to start a new list. Just the AFI list, and we're just gonna go there.
You guys, we're gonna get letters about this.
But when you throw Goonies in there, it's better.
More listeners were.
God.
Breakfast at Tiffany's. Come on.
I feel like, hey man, I feel like more listeners will appreciate our real scores.
Yeah,
sometimes
true.
The AFI list is just like it's untouchable. You know, like, nothing can go in the top 10 ever.
Hey, first of all, Sean, just think about this, okay? So you brought some movies that, you know, we're kind of like, you know, what's going on here? Like, remember, so just let you know, Vertigo is number 69, and this is way better than Vertigo. We also had North by Northwest, and that was number 53.
Something like a hot.
It's better than this.
So, Something Like a Hot, we scored that pretty well, actually. Yeah, yeah, that's actually, the movie's better than this movie.
No, but movie's perfect.
I do like Some Like
That's
a Hot
in
this movie.
All right. Now that we're at the end of this podcast episode, it's time for one of our gentlemen to tell
Sean,
us which movie we'll be watching and reviewing next week. So, Jeremiah, it is actually your selection. So, buddy, go ahead and tell us what we're watching and why we're watching it.
All right. Can I tell you a little story, like a little story to you guys and also to the listeners of like how I actually got this pick here? Okay. So, as you guys know, your listeners, I gave my pick to Sean so he can review this movie because this is one of his favorite movies, okay? So just on a side note, my fiance loves power ballad fucking music, right? Bryan Adams, well, Richard Marks, you know, REO Speedwagon. Okay. Just those power ballad fucking movies and songs and shit like that.
I can't fight this feeling
exactly,
anymore.
Dude. So the song comes on after all. You ever heard of that song? Here we are again. I guess it must be fates with Cher and Peter, Cetera. So, she's like,
all is said and done.
Yes. So she goes, oh my God, that is from one of my favorite movies of all time, you know, and this movie called Chances Are with Sybil Shepherd and a young Robert Downey Jr. So I'm like, oh, okay, cool, you know. So we end up watching it. And I'm like, yeah, it's cute, you know. And so before that, I was thinking, like, what I want to do with Sean for his birthday, you know. I'm like, hey, give him the fucking movie because he doesn't want to see one of my movies and shit. So I'm like, all right, I got to choose what I'm going to choose. And I'm like, okay, Marcia Jarre is the composer, and he's like one of my favorite composers, especially from the 80s, because he had fingerprints on every fucking movie from the 80s, right? So I'm looking down the list, and wouldn't you fucking believe it, the movie that he actually composed was Chances Are. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. How does that work out with Chances Are and with Lawrence of Arabia? And so I'm just like, fuck you. And I'm like, I seen the movie, sweetie. We're not going to do the movie, unfortunately, because these guys will be ripping each other out. They will rip the movie apart.
Actually, I love that movie, just so you know. I love that movie.
I've not seen it.
You love that movie? Oh, then Hannah's going to be so upset. She's going to be so upset.
There was another one that they did together, Sybil Shepherd and Robert Downey Jr., where he was dead, or something where he was...
Heart and Souls. Well, that's a great movie, but that's not Sybil Shepherd.
Heart and Souls, that's right. Shepherd. Oh, it's not? No. Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Heart and Souls. Anyways,
going, Jeremiah. So,
so what movie are we doing? What movie are we doing?
So I said, like, listen, sweetie, they're going to rip it apart. I don't want to do it. So I looked at all his other movies. I'm like, you know what? There was one movie that literally scared the shit out of me when I was little, and I wanted to see it. And here we go again.
Poltergeist.
It's Ghost.
Oh.
The 1990 film with Patrick Swayze, Debbie Moore.
Swayze.
Yeah. So I'm going with a very unusual film.
And another very power ballad heavy movie.
Yes, it is. I mean, this
movie. Let's make some pottery,
Unchained
everybody.
Melody, was that the...
let's make some pottery.
Unchained Melody was...
Listen, and folks, the reason why I'm picking this movie, because movie. Like, if you know that I love Shadows, horror movies, and I think this was kind of the birth of like what influenced me in horror movies, because this movie scared the crap out of me when I was little, and I'm pretty sure it's going to scare the crap out of me again. So,
yeah, bro,
I'm excited.
I'm afraid of Shadows. I can't just like...
Sorry, nice. Sweetheart.
All right.
Another Chances Are. Uh-huh. And then maybe next time.
Yeah. All right, if you enjoyed our podcast or our fan, please subscribe if you're listening. Our most listened to station is through Overcast. So we want to shout out to those listeners. Thank you so much for being there. Give us 5-star reviews over there. That'd be appreciated very much. You can find us on Instagram at the Gentleman Podcast. You can visit our website, thegentlemanpodcast.com. And if you want to reach out to us, you can do so by email at hosts with an S-H-O-S-T-S at thegentlemanpodcast.com. We want to thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Does anyone have a quarter? I want to play a quarter.
All right. Well, cheers, gentlemen.
Oh, that's a great scene.
It was
great
a penny, scene. Bro.
Oh, clink, clink.
All right. Cheers, everyone. Gentlemen. Peace out. See ya.